welcome listeners to The View From Here. My name's Steve Kirchhoff. I'm joined by Linda DuPriest and Jeff Milchin. We'll introduce ourselves first and then begin a conversation. So Steve Kirchhoff is a longtime Bozeman resident, was born and raised here. I'm currently an instructor in the English department at Montana State University. I've been a teacher for going on 30 years. I was also involved in local politics from 1999 to 2007, served on the City Commission one term as mayor. Still very interested in civic life, issues that affect all of us, and that's why we are here today. So I'll turn it over to who wants to go next.
And I'm Jeff Milchin. I'll be co-hosting the program. And I've been in Bozeman 16 years doing nonprofit work, primarily with the national organization, the American Independent Business Alliance, which essentially helps communities around the country support local independently owned businesses and work to build more vibrant local economies. And certainly have found over the years that development and transportation are key factors in what makes a community friendly toward local independent businesses or hostile to them in some cases. And so that's one of the perspectives I'll be bringing to the show. Also a longtime democracy advocate working with Reclaim Democracy amongst other organizations, and look forward to the conversation. Linda?
My name is Linda DuPriest. I'm a transportation planning consultant. Moved to Bozeman in 1992, was here for a while and then went away. Down to Austin, Texas, where I ran their bicycle and pedestrian program for 5 years, and then have been consulting with other municipalities in multimodal, active transportation, bicycling, walking trails, balanced transportation systems, and have been working here in Bozeman for the past 5 years on those issues.
All right. Well, the topic of our show today is bicycling and bicycling as transportation. What's the current status in Bozeman? What can be done to improve it? What are some of the issues that people care about? And so I'd like to start off by asking you, Linda, what's the importance of a city being friendly to bicyclists? You know, why is the city of Bozeman and Montana State publishing a lot of materials that talk about ways to make the community more bike friendly? And what's your perspective on that from your experience?
Well, what we're doing in Montana and is happening really in cities all over the U.S. There's been a urban bicycling boom going on now since for about the last 15 years. A lot of us have known for, of course, our whole lives that bicycling for transportation's one of the best ways to get around. It's efficient, it's healthy, it's kind to the planet, burns calories, it's cheap. But it's the whole country's really been energized with trying to make cities large and small more bicycle friendly.
I couldn't agree more, particularly with the fun part. This is Steve Kirchhoff, and I think I ride my bike, I would say conservatively, 330 days out of a year, maybe more. I'm lucky enough to live close to campus, and so I typically use local routes back and forth. But I grocery shop, I go downtown, I go to work, I bike for pleasure also. But I'm lucky to be in the core, and I find that there's a fringe that I don't want to get into on my bicycle, and that would be something like North and South 19th, Huffine Lane, the far ends of Main Street, both east and west, places that you would think a lot of people are cruising up and down every day, logically commuter lanes. If we really wanted to have commuter-based transportation for bicyclists in this town, those would be places that we should probably focus some energy. Would you say, Linda, besides just making it okay for people to go around on sidewalks in the core, we need to expand our safe network?
Yes. And is this, well, in addition to all of the things that we've said so far about why make a city bike friendly, you know, probably the most important one is that citizens of Bozeman want it to be. It's something they've decided they want in this community. It's an active community. It's an outdoorsy community. It's a family-oriented community, and these are parents that want their kids to be able to ride their bikes. They don't want to have to drive them every place. They want to give the kids that sense of freedom and independence. But certainly any city in America, because America was built around the single occupant vehicle transportation system, unless you're in a dense East Coast type of city, bike infrastructure, it's really excellent in some parts of town, and it's a little lacking in other parts, mainly because that's the transportation or the urban form that Bozeman was built up with. And it's not just Bozeman. It's all states, all cities across this country. In Bozeman, if we want to get into that right now, there's a lot of things that are great about our biking infrastructure. There's a lot of things the city is doing right in that regard. They've worked really hard in the past 10, 15 years they passed a complete streets policy in 2010, which is a principle of road building that says that streets should belong to people, not necessarily to vehicles, and should include all modes, cars, you know, freight trucks, buses, delivery vehicles, bicycling, walking, kids, adults, disabled people, the whole gamut. Bozeman put that into place. The transportation master plan, the most recent one, has, we were lucky to get a national bicycle planning expert on the consultant team, and we have a robust list of 71 bike projects and 42 pedestrian projects that are in that plan to be implemented, a wish list, actually. We have a development code that's very bike and pedestrian oriented. As new subdivisions come in, the roads are being designed with bike facilities and shared use paths and sidewalks.
The news is good.
The news is good. We also have some pretty committed elected leaders that are pushing for these things, and some city staff that are keyed into it and tuned into it as well. That said, it is an American transportation system, so there are.
So, Linda, one thing I was interested when you said America was built around automobiles, I might push back on that a little bit to say America was built around people and pedestrians, and then horse and buggies, and it's a relatively recent phenomenon to see communities, right, in the past half century, really built around prioritizing automobiles for a few centuries. It was exactly the opposite. It was built
we
first
could
for human
put
beings.
A date on it. We could put a date on the transition into the auto
post-war.
Center. Well, whenever they passed laws prohibiting jaywalking.
Jaywalking was something. Well, yeah, and you're absolutely right, Jeff. I mean, Bozeman has this old, the old neighborhood south of downtown. We had a streetcar on Grand and Black and Bozeman, and we had a streetcar system
here. Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know that?
I did not.
Oh, heck yeah.
Well, there's no evidence anymore. They cleaned it all up.
That's why Grand is so difficult to fix. There's so many potholes on it because the street is sinking into the old streetcar tracks.
Fascinating.
Anyway, you're absolutely right, but it was post-war when America sort of decided that cars were the way everybody wanted to go and needed to go, and it's understandable. They're wonderful things. They're convenient. They take us places cheaply and fast. Well, not cheaply, but yes.
I don't raise that just for the sake of argument, but I think it's important to recognize that the places that people value most as where they want to go for their vacations, whether Americans or foreigners, overwhelmingly, when you're talking about cities, tend to be places like Boston, like New York, like San Francisco, that are very pedestrian and bike friendly.
Like
and
downtown Bozeman.
Yes. So that process, of how we changed our communities from being prioritized around people to being prioritized around automobiles, I think is an important part of the discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, because now planners and engineers, since the, I would say, 1990s, it started at the national level. Once we got the interstate highway system built out, there were some smart guys in Washington who decided, we've laid enough concrete, maybe we can start going backward and thinking about filling in some of the other modes. and that's when they passed the first federal transportation bill that reflected more of a balance of funding other modes, and that was ICE-T in 1991. And it was led by Daniel Patrick Moynihan in the Senate. Max Baucus was on the Senate Transportation Committee back then. And that sort of started to change the thinking at the federal level. And then money was sort of came down to the local level to start to change infrastructure a little bit. Make money available for transit, bicycling, walking, urban trails. So since the 1990s, we've seen a shift in what people want out of their transportation system for all those reasons you mentioned.
How come I don't feel as comfortable on my bicycle seat as I'm being encouraged to by your description of all the wonderful things that the city of Bozeman has done? You know what I mean? Because there are places I just won't go. I just won't go on my bicycle out there. Forget about it. I don't even care if there is a facility. I don't want to ride on North 19th or Valley Center or Baxter or Oak.
Well, it's really important to ask about specific roadways. There are a couple of roadways in our town that are not city jurisdiction. They're jurisdiction of Montana Department of Transportation. 19th, Huffine, Maine. Couple of our roads are
Rouse.
Urban routes, right? Rouse is a highway.
And how about 7th?
North 7th is a highway. So MDT roads, they use a different orientation and a design standard on their roads because MDT's mandate is move people across Montana. And where a highway becomes a local street, sometimes they feel like they can design it as a local street. Other times they feel their mandate is to move cars faster on it. That's something that this city has done a lot of work with MDT on, particularly on North 7th. The Midtown mm-hmm. Business District has really worked with MDT a lot, and there's been some flexibility and progress on that. But when you're talking about making city bicycle friendly, a lot of it is in the retrofit mode. Because most cities in America were not built for bikes, so we're going back in and figuring out how to retro design them. That can be difficult because the streets aren't wide enough for bike lanes, or the space that would have a bike lane has parking in it. And people are very connected to parking. They don't want to give that up. And even if you do have room for a bike lane on a road, the tangent section of the road, which is in between the intersections, when you get to the intersection, it gets very complicated and scary for people.
Mm-hmm.
The good news there is that in the last 10 years, there is a new set of design standards that's hit the U.S. called the Urban Bikeway Design Guide. It's put out by this organization, NACTO, which is the National Association of City Transportation Officials. And that's a group of cities that formed for the very purpose of changing the way streets are designed in the U.S. Before they formed, and this is like Seattle, San Francisco, Portland, Washington, D.C., New York City, I think Houston's in there, Denver, Austin, Texas. These cities decided they wanted more local control over street design, whereas in the past, roads had been designed to a highway standard. So that's another change that has happened, and we do now have tools to design intersections better for bicycling. The city is looking at doing some of that, but it's newer thinking. It involves special markings that get scraped off by snow plows, so doing it in northern snowy cities is a challenge. But yeah, the news is good because at least we have tools now that we didn't have in this country 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So when you were talking about you know, people like their free parking. That's certainly part of the challenge, is the operative word there being free. You know, if automobiles were paying for their costs of operation rather than being heavily subsidized by our taxes as a whole, I think we might have a little bit different equation. You know, the latest studies I had seen showed that gas taxes were paying less than a half of the overall cost of operating an automobile. You know, we have our city's streets set aside for the placement of automobiles throughout the city, where that's far from the most economically productive use. They could be put to, you know, if you're looking at it in economic terms, leasing out that space to food trucks, to sidewalk vendors, to any number of different purposes would bring far more benefit to taxpayers than the purpose of free parking. So is there much of a discussion that from either of your perspectives going on within the city or county about questioning free parking and whether or not perhaps that should be paying more of its own way?
Well, parking is always the bone of contention. Whether or not they have solutions for it doesn't seem like it. I mean, I haven't heard about them, but maybe I'm not paying enough attention. What I do hear is that it always comes up, and that there's some sense that the infrastructure where we are, it's not able to sustain continued development of higher story buildings, et cetera, just because the streets are narrow, because there aren't dedicated bike lanes, because something has to give, right? And so I keep hearing that parking is a major issue. In fact, people who are opposed to the continual development of the near downtown neighborhoods use that as a bit of a billy club, right? So I don't know what fix there is on that. I haven't heard that there is one, except perhaps building another parking structure in this parking lot right behind the federal building, which would be a good idea.
Well, it's so interesting, you know, that so many people talk about America as a free market economy, but nobody wants to have a market for parking. That
right.
Everyone wants socialized, it seems, or at least a substantial portion of the public believes
in
socializing the cost of parking, even though they wouldn't argue for that for most other optional services. You know, obviously things like public safety. There's widespread support for having socialized police department,
well, wait a
fire
second.
Department,
I'm not quite
and others.
Sure I follow what you're saying, because like the curb right out here in front of your house, right? This is what you might call free parking, right? But it's not free. We're all paying for it through our street assessments and through our maintenance.
Right.
So that's how we keep it going. We all agree that it should be for anyone, first come, first serve, right? You as a homeowner, you don't owe them those linear feet in front of your house.
Correct.
But homeowners tend to think that they do.
Right.
You know, somebody buys a house in an old neighborhood like this one, south of Main Street, and they decide to own three or four vehicles. Or they turn their garage into a gear room, and so they have to park their car in the street. And they're now getting free private property storage out of the rest of us taxpayers. That's basically how free on-street parking, that's what it is market-wise. It's free storage space that a private citizen is getting for their car.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm curious how much of the challenge when we're looking at creating a more bike-friendly city is that all of this infrastructure geared toward covering the cost of automobiles, whether it's parking, you know, lack of gasoline taxes, covering sufficient portions of paving new roads, repaving streetlights, and all the other infrastructure that goes into that. How much of the challenge is that, and can we make Bozeman a much more bike-friendly community without, at some level, making it less convenient or prioritizing cars less?
Well, that's why when you're doing a bike plan, figuring out where you're going to put bike facilities is you try to aim for collectors and arterials to have the bike lanes on them because there's space for them. You're certainly not going to take an old, you know, South Bozeman Street or North Montana Street, where it's traditionally residential and it doesn't move that many cars a day. You're not going to take the parking off of those streets because, for one thing, bicyclists can share very low speed streets with cars, and and bicyclists training themselves to ride in traffic is a whole nother part of this discussion that I don't know if we're going to have time to get into. But even so, some the way that Bozeman has grown in particular, some of our collectors and arterials, which are the streets that are supposed to move more traffic of all kinds, they traditionally have had parking on them. And where there's parking that people don't want to give up, there's no space for a bike lane. So we do have several streets in this city that have parking on them now, where the Transportation Master Plan is recommending removing that parking. But that has to be handled in a very individual, case-by-case basis. You look at how much parking there is. Can the people that are parking there now park on a side street? Can they park in their driveway? And it turns into a political question of, does the city need more to have that a bike lane? Or does the city as a whole, with all of its goals, think that it's more important to have on-street parking there? And those are difficult challenges.
Yeah.
Just as a side note, right now, New York City, that has just gone crazy in a good way, very aggressive building bike facilities all over it, is right now taking 200 parking spaces off of Central Park Boulevard West from in front of fancy, fancy condos and apartment buildings and putting a separated bike lane in there. And that's really bold. But they're doing it because this year so far, they've already had 19 cycling deaths in that city. So it comes down to what your citizens want, what they ask for, what they demand, and who decides to take that on in terms of...
Sometimes they just cut the baby in half, like on South 8th when it was improved from Main Street up to campus, whatever that is. Is that Grant or Cleveland, I think it was. They didn't want to give up the parking, wanted to add a bike lane, ended up doing both by cutting the boulevard, the median, the middle strip by like 6 or 8 feet. So we had those skinny little center medians that were wider before the improvements.
These days, because now we have the NACTO guide, now we have... cities in the U.S. are starting to design bike facilities like they do in Holland, the Netherlands, which is the best bicycling country in the whole world. And one of the reasons is that they have these separated bike facilities. It's a bike lane on the street, but it's separated from the car traffic by maybe a 2-foot-wide curb or a stripe, you know, a bigger stripe than just a traditional bike lane. And these days, a road like that we might decide to make the median even smaller or to put the bicycle space behind the parked cars up next to the sidewalk, which is one way it's being done. So, and then you give the cars enough space to open their doors without whacking a bicyclist when they're coming by.
I think they've done that in Missoula, haven't they?
Yeah. Missoula has a separated bike lane. I think it's on Higgins. Yeah, and actually, if you go to the if you go to NACTO's Urban Bikeway Design Guide website, they have a photograph of that bike lane there. And we actually, so the city is trying these things. The new high school, Annie Street, goes through the middle of it, and on that street, we're doing a bike lane design like that. It's behind the curb, and then at the intersections, one end is Flanders Mill, and the other end is Cottonwood. That bike lane's bending down into the street, and we modeled that after the Missoula design.
All right.
So yeah.
That's good stuff.
What are some other really positive examples from other cities or other countries that might be worth considering for implementation here in Bozeman?
Well, before that, I would like to go back to the parking subject just for a few minutes, because Bozeman is, I don't know if you're aware, but they've actually been pretty progressive with their parking requirements.
Yes.
Are you aware of what they've
done on parking minimums you're
on
talking
North
about,
7th
right?
in Midtown?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's some very bold stuff. And they're doing that. And we have to give them a lot of credit for that. It's happening here.
I agree. And that's, you know, you mentioned we're just a few doors away from the Black Olive. That certainly was a hot hot issue in this area. And while I was certainly a proponent of lowering the height of the building, I parted ways with a lot of the opposition who were arguing that parking was an inadequate consideration. I mean, yes, it's going to impact us here right in our neighborhood. It's going to be very hard to find mm-hmm. on-street parking. But I don't feel like I'm entitled to have free parking paid for by the rest of the city taxpayers.
That's a prudent attitude to have. Because the best bicycling cities in this country and in the world, they're happening in places that these cities are taking out existing parking spaces, or they make parking a premium and it's not a given. Of course, you go back to Amsterdam. Rotterdam is a city I spend a lot of time in. And if you have an apartment in one of those Dutch cities, you're paying for a parking space out on the street. Mm-hmm. And it's not even guaranteed that you're going to get one. What you're paying for is a hunting permit. You pay for the privilege of there might be a right. space available for you.
Have there been sort of close observations made of how many motorists who will be using these new midtown businesses on North 7th or going to, you know, West Main and Huffine Lane to the new stuff that Delaney's doing out there? How many of those people are coming from far-flung neighborhoods like near Four Corners or the far northwest side of Bozeman, and they basically come into town because they have to drive to get to town because it's unpleasant to ride the bike? So they drive into town, they park for work, they get in their car, and then they go to midtown on their way home. And they're going to park there. So is there a notion of, like, who is going to feel the impact of the disappearing parking? If we want to do the progressive thing, right, and make things biker-friendly, that means that there's going to be fewer parking spaces. But does that run up against what is essentially like our sort of sprawling growth model, where each new subdivision is further west and further northwest?
Well, the Community Development Department, you know, along with the City Commission, has worked really hard on coming up with parking requirements for different types of business zones. And so that's all been factored in. You can't, when you're writing a development code, think of every possible chain of transportation trips that somebody in every part of your city is going to make to every other part of it. You have to...
Well, you get pretty close, because that's how you run your impact fee program. So you have to
right.
account for how many people are coming from out of town, how many people are doing in-town, cross-town
yeah.
traffic, right? So, I mean, I just wonder what the numbers are on that.
I don't have them off the top of my head. I would highly recommend getting somebody from, you know, Marty Mattson's the director, Brian Krueger, Chris Saunders. There's some really sharp guys in the Community Development Department that know this parking stuff inside and out.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
But I do right. see that Bozeman's really, really, they're being progressive in mm-hmm. that area.
Sure.
I mean...
Well, thanks for coming back to that.
Yeah, sorry. Took a while.
No, quite all right.
Digression.
No, it's a lovely thing, because I know that it's stymied would be like entrepreneurs and people who want to start up a business, because they can't, they weren't able to in the past come up with sufficient parking, and they weren't able to pay the parking in lieu or the cash in lieu for the parking they couldn't provide. So,
right.
it hurts people who want to start a business.
Absolutely.
I remember one of the best bicycling cities in the country is Portland, Oregon. And, they started working on that really aggressively in 1991 or 92. And a gentleman who had been on the city commission, who's now a congressman, Earl Blumenauer, worked with the bicycle industry in the 90s on getting us more savvy about lobbying in D.C., and I was in the bike industry at the time. Anyway, he used to say that if you create great places, livable places, and... He was one of the first people that actually used that word in a policy context, livability. People will figure out how to get there. They will carpool. They'll ride a bike. Certainly here we have a challenge with winter. But we shouldn't always assume that everybody has to get to every attractive thing in a city in a single occupant vehicle by themselves. There's improvising that people will do.
Right. Well, so that mention of winter, that certainly is one of the challenges here. And amongst them, seems like many of the existing bike lanes have a problem with being covered with snow, gravel, others. What are your thoughts on addressing those issues? And as part of, you know, instilling more of a year-round biking culture, I mean, I have no problem for the most part riding a bike through the winter, but it certainly becomes more challenging for many folks.
Okay, where do we start? Obviously, we have a very harsh and snowy winter, but we also have a university where a huge chunk of kids come to school every year without a car. We have a rugged outdoor populace that doesn't shirk at getting on a bicycle in the winter. And we also have a lot of snowfall and a city road department that's highly challenged with just keeping up with that. Mm-hmm. And they do a really great job. But the northern snowy cities that have a lot of bicycling year-round, they're making an effort to maintain it in the winter. Not at the same level, but, you know, you're talking about Minneapolis, an outstanding example of a snowy city with really aggressive policy for keeping bike lanes clear as Montreal. These are bigger cities with more money than we have. But BABAB, the Bicycle Bozeman Area Bicycle Advisory Board, last year started working on this. And they have a proposal for the city to look at maybe just a couple of routes and setting aside money to keep those better cleared. It's an incremental approach. You know, enough people have to ask for it. Then, you know, the city sees if they can make it possible as part of their regular operations, and then you see how it goes. It's very tricky to do it because the plows come in and they come down the travel lanes, the car travel lanes, and the snow goes into the bike lane. So they'd have to make another pass down the bike lane. And where does that snow then go?
You've got cars that...
That you'd be the snow has to go onto, piled onto the tree strip.
Right.
Well, it's not, in Texas it's called a tree strip. It's called a boulevard here. Mm-hmm. Piles up there in between the road and the sidewalk. Or the city has to actually load up that snow and stick it in a truck and haul it someplace. So if they get it all piled in the tree strip, then we get a melt, melts back into the bike lane, freezes. So it's super complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it can't be done, but it's one of those things that has to be figured out how to prioritize it. But right. BABAB has started working on that.
All right.
Yeah, because we have a lot of people that ride all through winter. I do.
Yep. So Linda, you were mentioning
not everywhere,
students,
but
and I'm curious from both of you. You know, in looking over the Montana State University Master Plan from 2017, it included the language, quote, "The university will be a leader in setting policy, developing programs, encouraging respectful riding, and improving infrastructure to encourage bicycling to, from, and within the MSU campus."
Well, I'm up there every day the school is in session and there are more bike racks. There's a greater tolerance for bikers. Wasn't that long ago that you were told to get off your bike and walk it while you were on the sidewalks in campus, but now you're just encouraged to ride safely among the pedestrians, and so that's what people do. There are more bike racks. There are more bikes in the bike racks. I don't know how to account for whether there are more commuters coming from off campus and riding their bikes, or if they're just in the nearby neighborhoods mm-hmm. or in those apartments that are along 11th or nearby streets. The campus has also grown by, say, 3,000 students in the last 10 years, so it might just be that the number of facilities has increased just to pick up that increment of growth, and it's not an actual increase, you know, per capita of people who are riding their bikes. But I don't know.
You know, I think it might be interesting to listeners to hear about some strong success stories from other cities and countries, and figured you might be a great source to talk about some of that. Linda, I was reading one piece earlier today about the dramatic expansion in Denmark. They nearly doubled the percentage of people commuting by bike to work, I believe, in the course of just 7 years through infrastructure improvements. And so what are some of the successes that we might learn from and draw ideas from?
Well, the trouble with talking about Copenhagen in Denmark and talking about the Netherlands is that Americans tend to think of those folks over there as kind of freaks. Like, they're a different species. They're not like us.
But they have quite a winter in Denmark, right?
Oh, man. It's cold there.
We're not talking about a place where it's tropical.
They don't deal with snow, necessarily, mm-hmm. in their cities. But the thing about these... Okay, in the U.S., the best bicycling city in the U.S., is this freak outlier that has a 19% bicycle-pedestrian mode split. Mm-hmm. To compare that to Bozeman, ours is about 6%. Portland's is about 8% citywide. In one neighborhood in Portland, it's crept up to 13%.
So I imagine people might be curious when you talk about
Davis,
this freak
California.
Outlier.
Okay. Davis, California. It's very exciting there. I grew up not far from there. This couple who was involved in the community there went to Holland in the 70s, and they came back and said, we could do this here. We should try to make Davis like Holland. And they got to work, and they got serious about it because it's a city a lot like Bozeman. It's dead-ass flat, and it's dominated by a university. So those two characteristics right there set that place up to not have topography issues. They have a population that needs alternative transportation that uses it. But they just, they decided that's the kind of city environment they wanted to have. So that's certainly a success. We're doing really well here. Missoula has been at the top of bicycle-friendly cities in the U.S. for decades. They have a pretty high bicycle mode split, but the places that are doing it really well, particularly in the Netherlands, they have a whole culture, not to mention a dense urban form. They live in dense cities. There's not a whole lot of room for cars because there's canals and water all over the place. So cars don't work very well for an entire culture. It's not just a bunch of crazy bicyclists that are trying to change things. It's very normal there for people to not own a car and not drive because it's inconvenient to own a car.
Right.
Gasoline
right.
is $7 a gallon. There's no place to park them. They have an outstanding train system, so there are alternatives. But a key thing that I've noticed visiting there is there's a law enforcement culture that if you're on a bicycle, and they certainly have excellent separated bicycle facilities everywhere, but there's always going to be a place where there's not going to be room for a bike lane. And you have to be sharing the car lanes with cars. The reason a lot of people in Holland still will do that is that the cars are going in the inner city, they're going 19 miles an hour. Under 30 kilometers an hour. They're going slowly, and if a motorist hits a bicyclist, they go to jail. They pay the bicyclist's medical costs. Even if a motorist hits a bicyclist and it's the bicyclist's fault, that motorist is paying 50% of the bicyclist's costs. So they have set up a culture that defers to people that are not in cars. And so that creates this atmosphere of the roads don't belong to the cars. They belong to everybody. And it's legislated and it's enforced. And kids start learning how to ride bicycles in that country in kindergarten.
Right.
So that part, you know, that kind of gives me hope for the U.S. looking at that, the other pieces besides just the infrastructure, because it's going to be very expensive and take a long time for us to convert our infrastructure to a more balanced
right.
of all modes. But if bicyclists, if we can develop another part of the culture that accepts that bicyclists do belong in the road, and if bicyclists educate themselves on how to behave in traffic,
mm-hmm.
we can get a lot more people out there riding.
Right. So on the economics, you know, we've talked from the side of car subsidies a lot and how in these other places those costs are not socialized. People are paying a lot of money to park because the land is valuable and so forth. But I think there's another side to that. And even in the United States, where it is heavily subsidized, it's still a major expense. I mean, when you look at reimbursement rates that the government pays for people who have to drive for work, for example, it's well over 50 cents a mile now. And that's often overlooked. People disregard those costs. They're thinking about only the cost of petrol. But when we talk about the challenge of the cost of living here, it frustrates me sometimes to hear all the talk focused on affordable housing rather than affordable living. And if we create a city in which you can easily go down from 3 cars to 2 if you're a big family with kids, or 2 cars to 1,
mm-hmm.
then you are freeing up thousands of dollars a year that can maybe pay for a nicer home or a home that's more central rather than out in the further reaches of the county,
or Belgrade.
Spend more money going out to dine more frequently, money at local businesses. There are so many different ways in which I think we overlook that aspect of, if you can free people from auto dependence, you're not just giving them a gift of more freedom, you're giving them a hell of a lot of money. So how can that play into the discussions that we're having around the cost of living in Bozeman and affordability?
Well, you're absolutely right. There's a in a lot of projects that get funded through the, it used to be called the Tiger Grant, now it's called the Build Grants, and these are big transportation federal grants that are given out. To get one of those grants, you had to do a calculation of housing price with transportation cost to determine if your trail out to somewhere in Atlanta was going to have a return on investment. So when we talk about affordable housing here in Bozeman, often the housing is way out in the new west part of Bozeman, which is great. It's cool out there. But if people are then going to be driving into Central every day, then is it really that much more affordable if they're, you know, having to pay for an extra car or whatever.
Right.
So that's now a common planning index. It's not just cost of your house, but house and your transportation costs. So I don't know the extent to which HRDC or the affordable housing movement here in Bozeman is looking at that. Sometimes you got to go where the land's cheaper. But it's definitely part of that whole equation.
Mm-hmm.
Often when you choose to live closer to things so that you can bicycle, you are going to pay more for rent. And that's a decision, and that's a choice that everybody has. Everybody does have that choice.
Well, people with money have more choices.
People with money have more choices of, certainly.
Is it a matter of, if we build the facilities, they will be filled? I remember reading once upon a time that if you lived within 300 feet of a trail, your activity was bound to increase by 60%.
Oh, there's all kinds of data.
Right?
Oh, yeah. The cliche from the movie, if you build it, they will come. It's absolutely true with trails and bike and ped facilities. That said, if you just build a bike lane on a street and then you get to an intersection and the intersection is terrifying, like Oak and 19th,
mm-hmm.
or Fowler and Huffine, that's a problem. You're not going to get as big a benefit out of that stretch of bike lane if you can't get anywhere after you get to the end of it. And one thing I love about our transportation master plan and the recommendations in it is that it recommends grade separations, which is a bicycle underpass or overpass, at Fowler and Huffine, at 19th and Stevens. It's in our plan that we need to be in. Jeff Krause and I have taught. He was Jeff. Commissioner Krause is the liaison to BABAB, and we've talked a lot in BABAB with him about how the subdivisions that are going out on Huffine that are going to serve the new high school, how are those kids, if we want those kids to not have to drive to that new high school, how are they going to get across Huffine? And those are not impossible projects. They're doable. They just take a commitment funding and a longer-term planning thinking that, you know, you start working on it now, it gets on the ground in 15 years. But but Bozeman right now, I think, is the only decent-sized city in Montana that doesn't have some sort of bicycle-pedestrian grade separation in its city. Like, there's been no over-underpass built just for bikes and peds in this town, and Great Falls has them, Missoula has them, Helena has them. That's where we need them.
So maybe the cliche should be reformulated a little bit. If you build them right, people will come.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's quite hopeful because we have these tools now, this NACTO guide with these intersection treatments. The folks at WTI have been talking about that innovative design for a few years now. It's just a matter of taking one bike route and piece by piece making all the pieces of it work.
I've seen two bike ped underpasses. One's out there on Huffine by Ashley Furniture.
Yeah, for Montfort and School.
Yeah, for Montfort.
That's an amazing project.
And then there's another one that they're doing right now. It's under construction to get to the Drinking Horse parking lot from that new
right. Okay. Yeah, the path. Trail to the M. Mm-hmm. Fantastic project. I think Jeff and I were talking about that. It was funded by a federal program called FLAP, Federal Lands Access Program, and GVLT got that grant. So in the Montfort and School, as I understand it, it was a bunch of parents got together with the school and MDT and said, our kids aren't going to cross this road, and boom, it was built. It's wonderful. That's the sort of things that are in our plan that need to happen.
So the other ingredient is just the will of citizens.
Well, actually, in my field, this field of trying to retrofit American transportation systems for bicycling, we talk about the three-legged stool. And that is, one leg is elected officials and politicians, the other leg is citizens, and the third leg is city staff. And how all of those three things have to be committed and checking on each other and inspiring each other. And those all three things have to come into play for any city to get better at this.
So as someone who's spent the past 20 years as a small business advocate, I'm wondering, where's the private sector in that in terms of businesses? And one of the things...
It should be a four-legged stool.
One of the things that jumped out at me recently visiting the new location for Heeb's Supermarket on East Main is they invested, the developers there, a lot of money in nice, ample, covered bike parking convenient to the store. And it was like, just struck me in the face. That's unheard of here in Bozeman for that to be a priority for a developer. So want to applaud whoever was responsible for that and ask, how do we get more private employers doing that to make their workplaces attractive for their employees to bike to work, for their customers to come and visit by bike?
Well, that's the developer and our development code. I mean, I was working on the development review committee when that project came through, and the code required those bike parking spaces, and the different iterations of that project that came across the desk, the planning staff was just great about making sure all that was in there.
And did that actually require them to be covered bike parking, or was that an elective by the developer?
You know, I don't remember that part.
Okay.
It might have been a choice of the developer. It might have been encouraged by our planning staff.
Right.
I mean, our planning staff's great.
Talking about the weather challenges, and certainly That's part of it. It's not much fun to come to a snow and ice covered bike at the end of your work day. So having something that takes care of that is certainly a factor as well.
And the city working with MDT and with that development, they've put in that wonderful crosswalk there at East Curtis. I just moved into that little neighborhood. And it is so easy to get from Lindley Park and that neighborhood over to the Hebes there to get across that to the trail system. They've just done a great job there. It's really, really excellent. And that's all the different pieces that the city of Bozeman's been doing for the last many years to make these things come together and actually get on the ground. So.
All right. So as far as ways people can get involved, as Steve was referring to, I know we've got, you mentioned the Bicycle Advisory Board, Linda. Is there a role that the Gallatin Valley Bike Club and institutions like some of the bike shops in town or the bike kitchen are playing in bike advocacy? And what ideas do you all both have on where people can engage most effectively?
Oh, I really deeply wish all of those entities were more engaged. There's several different groups, writing groups in this town. Not to be a grouse here, but I never saw them show up at BABAB meetings. That's a terrible thing to say, but I would like to see we need more engagement. Because there's people out there, bicycle enthusiasts, who they're going to have kids that they want to be able to, they already have kids. Maybe they're not thinking because they're comfortable riding on streets or in traffic, but their neighbors, their families, there's a lot of folks out there. And if we just got them more engaged, going to commission meetings and just, go to the general public comment that is at the, every commission meeting has a general public comment at the beginning of the meeting, and people can talk about anything. Sometimes when I go to city commission meetings, there's nobody from the public there asking for anything. Our elected officials want to hear from people. They want to hear from people, and certainly all the bike clubs, all the bike businesses, any business in Bozeman that wants more people coming to the business and doesn't want to have to build a bunch of parking spaces should be interested in this. It takes people.
Yeah, it certainly takes a lot of education of business owners in many cases, too. I mean, I do a lot of work with businesses around the country, and there's often a lack of knowledge about just how many more customers you can, a bike rack can easily hold 10 bicycles in the space occupied by one car, and the fact that bike traffic is far friendlier to smaller independent businesses, that you're going to get a lot more people stopping where they don't necessarily need to see your sign from 200 yards away as they do speeding down 19th Street. They actually have time to see what's around, to investigate a business they may not have before if they're on foot or by bike, and to recognize the benefits to their business, the economic bottom line of having that kind of bike infrastructure. And, on the economic side also, Headwaters Economics, based here in Bozeman, has done some studies about the investment in the bike trail they built up in Whitefish and how that's created 80 plus new jobs in the community. They projected by attracting people to the community who are destination bicyclists. So we've been focusing largely on transportation, but it also plays a role in bringing people to the community, making it more attractive to visitors, and certainly trails like the Bozeman to the Mountains Trail. I'm not thinking of
it. Trail to the M.
Trail to the M is, part of what goes into that. But I think often the economic return is something that's not fully appreciated as well.
Well, and maybe you've read some of the studies by University of Montana. They have this tourism program, and they do a lot of economic studies about, they've done some really excellent studies on bicycling. Like when people come to Montana and they go hang out in Bozeman for in a town like Bozeman for a few days, how much do they want to bicycle around town with their family? Or are they coming here to bicycle tour? And the numbers are very impressive. I don't have them off the top of my head, but it's in the hundreds of millions that people come here. Either they come here to mountain bike, or they come here with their family, or they come here to bicycle tour. So, yeah, I mean, in this town with our wonderful GVLT and our town trails and how they connect to streets in town to go to really cool businesses, it's huge potential for the tourism part. Huge.
Linda, your knowledge is vast. your commitment is deep.
Rambling and dull.
No, truly, it's as lovely as can be. And I just, Jeff, your question is still out there. Like, what can people do to help spur more and more bike development and make a more biker-friendly community? And I would agree with what Linda said, and that is that if you show up at meetings, even at the beginning of the meeting, there's no pressure, there's no light in your face, and you say something in that open public comment portion that starts right at 6 p.m. at the city commission meeting room, and you advocate for, you know, close attention and implementation of the bike plans that we have already in place. That's a wonderful thing to do, and it gives commissioners the opportunity to make a comment on it too, because they hear those comments and then later in the meeting they might bring it up. They're the ones with the bully pulpit. I've always thought that whatever local elected officials talk about, other people talk about, because people are watching them on television, people are reading the newspaper reports. Speaking of newspaper, that's another way to get it out there. Writing letters to the editor. It's still kind of a community bulletin board in Bozeman.
Oh, yeah.
I think people do look at the Chronicle. Maybe not as much as they used to, but it's still out there, and it's a great place. It's a wonderful venue to advocate for things that you think are positive for the community.
For sure.
So I would just piggyback on what you said about that. Talk about it, write about it, and get it out there, and that will help the momentum.
Right. I heard a... an expression recently in a mountain biking context, talking about how if you don't show up and speak up, well, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So if you don't show up and advocate for yourself,
I like that.
The thing that you're going to care about is going to be, you know, why should our electeds or our staff people care about it if citizens aren't caring about it?
Right.
And another part of that speaking up part is to also say thank you.
Absolutely.
Say thank you. Particularly our planning department and our public works department and our parks department, everybody at the city, with the incredible growth that's going on in Bozeman. The city employees, you know, they get beat up a lot.
Right.
And if you're going to give your input, say thank you, be respectful, always be respectful. They're folks that care about the same things you do.
Right.
Beating up on them is not...
Recognize the positives. For sure, I wanted that.
Believe me, I've been in that chair, as has Steve, and it's no fun to come to work and be beat up on all day.
Hey, I had one question for you, Linda, that didn't come out. You know, when I've talked to people, I do a lot of my travel by bike around here, and people often talk about, well, I don't necessarily have time for that. And I know anywhere within the city limits, I'm likely to beat a car, move faster by bicycle.
Yeah.
Have there been any good kind of educational tools to try to quantify that and get that across to people, or any kind of data behind that?
Some cities have played around with, you know, travel time studies is what they're called, to try to make their point. That certainly ends up being part of a public education campaign that hopefully your bike club is doing, or your local bike advocates, or maybe your university would do. I think I worked in the bicycle industry for a long time, and I was a bicycle journalist for a little while, and I think that we generally have done not a very good job of promoting the benefits of bicycling to normal, regular people that are not in Lycra, that are not going fast. We haven't done a really good job of that.
Linda DuPriest, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks for your expertise. Thanks for the positive word. Really appreciate it.
Now get on your bikes and ride.
I am.
As Freddie Mercury would say.